CliffCentral.com.
Not a week goes by without a little bit of drama, right? So this morning, Sia had to rush in. Simpiwe had some kind of car issue, and there would have been no one in the studio. So even if we'd been doing this from home, like, nobody would have been able to hear us. So still, we still need, you know, despite all of the things that we've got right, there's still a few things that we're finessing. I see Fundo is saying, and Fundo's been there from episode number one. He's saying that he's done a quick calculation. We've done like 4,000 episodes of the podcast in the last 7 years. So that's quite incredible. That means, so at 4,000 episodes and 2 hours, does he mean like episodes or because we've got two a day? So if it's 4,000 episodes, then that's it. But if it's 8,000, I mean, that's because it would be two a day, right?
If you want me to get technical, remember when we started,
we used
would
to do
podcast
three.
Everything in one.
Yeah, correct.
And then we divided it
right,
like probably a few months into different parts. And then sometimes you'd have a guest included. Then sometimes we'd separate a guest. That's me being technical. Or we can just take it as 4,000
right,
hours.
Well, I'll take the 4,000 hours because then, you know, add that to all the radio time, which was already about, 12,000. It's time for me to retire. It's time to get out. I think people are probably sick.
Oh, no.
They're sick of me by now. That's a lot of hours. It's time for something new. Let me see. It's officially the time. I'm going to hand over the show to you. It's yours.
No, not when I'm out of breath this morning.
So no. Sia had to rush into the studio today, and he doesn't have his car at the moment because he had that car accident. Did Ruesa not sort out a car for you yet?
Oh, Arama Ruesa. So it's official now that they're writing the car off, which I would have thought was such a simple process.
Yeah.
But goodness. And as much as there's so many technicalities to go through, one would also think that the system was more advanced. The number of sketches that I've had to draw the past few days / weeks, for me says, what? Like, I'm sure somehow, maybe through my phone with geolocation or with my tracker, you can see how fast I was going and that you can estimate, or maybe there are cameras on the street I was using. The number of sketches, honest to goodness, they're like, okay, so you are, okay, now I was going to use Rosa's voice, but you are car A, and then you drove into car B. So you just draw that for me. Just draw. Just let me know what happened. I'm like, well, okay, Rosa, like I told you, it was a robot. No, we slipped out of control. Anyway.
So they're going to write it off, huh?
They're going to write it off before any payouts or whatnot are officially made.
Ugh.
They have to do all of these last minute things.
Well, in a way, you would prefer that because it means they'll either give you enough money to start off with a new car, or you can decide not to get a car and Uber for the rest of your life, or whatever, because you'll get the money. But you don't have to drive around in a car that has to be repaired, and it never ever is 100% like it used to be. And you know, it doesn't have to be a fancy car. Like, they just, it's really hard for panel beaters and, you know, all the people who add their little bit of skill to the various processes that make the car right again and roadworthy again. It's just never 100% correct. Anyway,
I do have this weird inkling, though, too. I was talking to my sister, and she did say, yeah, it is weird. I want to see my car for the last time.
Oh,
yes, I know, it's not a human.
Really? No, Sia, just let it go.
It's not a funeral, but I just want to say, oh, man.
No, okay. let it go. Let it go.
No.
Seriously, you don't need
You're
to.
You're the one who names your cars.
Yeah,
I didn't go that far.
Yeah, but you don't need to have a funeral for a car. It's fine, Sia.
It's not a funeral.
It's going to be depressing to you to see it. First of all, it's going to remind you of the accident. And second of all, your car's going to be looking like shit. It's probably in some, you know, junkyard at the moment. It's probably already been turned into scrap metal. You just don't know it.
Ah, don't say that.
Yeah.
That is sad. Well, like for this morning though, I was in the Uber and I could get some work done while I was there. Yeah. So those are perks of not having to drive yourself.
Yeah, and if you don't have if you don't have long distances, like when you go back to visit your family in Durban, then you know, for most of the time, and as you've realized over the last few weeks, because nobody's traveling nearly as much as they used to, you could probably manage like never before with something like Uber.
Yeah, I don't think I would have coped if I was coming to the office every single day and had meetings all around town. That wouldn't have worked at all. But it was funny because this morning was also the moment while I was sitting working in the Uber, I realized, because I'm so not used to grabbing things anymore, like grabbing my car keys when I left, I just left the house with my house keys. Right. I forgot the studio keys.
Oh, shit. So what did you do?
I remembered that great legend named Ben Karpinski. I do remember he did jump in through a window.
Oh, yeah? So what did you do?
I had to jump into a window this morning.
So you did a break-in?
To any killers out there, we are not saying easy target, no. But
wow.
I came in and I had to ask security, I was like, hey, don't you have a spare key? And they said, no, it's locked up in reception and we can go to reception. I thought, nah, that's too much time, too much effort. So I told the guy, I know it will seem weird, but you know, this is a time sensitive issue. I need to get in. And this is me with like, you know, I left the house in a hurry. So I'm wearing my Mickey Mouse slippers. full disclosure, I'm wearing shorts under this.
That's hilarious. Oh so, my god.
There was a point. The security guard
We've got a meeting at the office later. Are you gonna go home in between or are you gonna keep those Mickey Mouse slippers on?
I mean, let's read the room. Let's see later. The security guard had to prop me through the window, and I thought, this is the most ridiculous sight anyone has ever seen.
Funny.
Mickey Mouse slippers sticking out my ass there, but we made it in. We had the show. That's the most important
thing. Well done, Sia. Yeah, Jesus. Like we make a plan. So I'm sorry that the show started late this morning, but we were trying to make a plan. So a couple of things that have come through. First of all, Ali says, what would you do if you retire? Oh, are you kidding? So much. There's no shortage of things that I would like to do. And you know what? I had this conversation with a friend of mine over the weekend. I wish I could turn my hobbies, the things that I'm like really passionate about, but that make no money. I wish I could turn them into businesses because I don't think I'm actually a businessman at all. And I think that's a talent that you're born with. And I don't have that talent. You know, if I could turn the architecture or the chemistry or the history or the music or the collections of stuff that I'm interested in, if I could turn all of that into a business, I mean, it would be so easy. I think I'd just make money hand over fist. It would be so great if I could find a way of doing that stuff for cash. But those are the hobbies. Those are the things I have to spend money on. And I would love to do them forever. So I've got to make money in between. And I'm looking for some new challenges at the moment. Not that I'm going to stop doing the show. I was threatened to, but I'm not going to. But I need some new challenges. I need something new to do. I mean, the TV show was a good one. You know, last year, every year I like to do something new. And last year, because of Corona and everything else, a lot of my best laid plans were put on hold. But then, fortunately, this TV show came along and it gave Sia and I something new to do and something cool and something interesting to do. The show is like a long-term relationship, this show. And these things are like affairs that you have in between. But I'd like to think about what this year might be in terms of what new things I could do this year, because it's time to get going again. You know, I don't want to sit still for too long, and it feels like we're sitting still at the moment, so I need to get moving.
But someone like Venus Williams owns her own, I don't know if it's an interior decorating company. She doesn't do it herself.
Yeah.
She likes the idea of it, but she's hired people who go out and they design, and she just sits in on the meetings every now and then if she pitches and she can. I feel like I'm planning my demise here by giving you other ideas.
No, but bring it, because you know what will happen.
Yes.
If you don't keep me entertained and I don't keep moving forward, then I start becoming grumpy and difficult. And then it's horrible for everybody, and then I will cancel the show because I won't be enjoying it anymore. But that's a way.
Okay, I'll line up some architects that you can possibly hire.
Don't panic. We'll be all right. We'll be okay. In the long run, we'll be fine. So anyway, Funda
says,
that's
great self-awareness.
Yeah, you've got to keep moving up. You can't. I would hate to do the same thing every year for the same same reasons. It would just be so boring. Fundo says, maybe I could lecture history, but there's no money in that. And if I were just doing history lectures and earning what a university history lecturer would get, I'd be horrified. It'd be like, because I know I'd put in way more effort than they would, and I'd make it entertaining, and it would be like really, really cool, and probably turn it into YouTube videos and everything, but I'm going to earn money from that. So why put in that amount of time? I'd rather just read about the history myself, and I'm curious about it, so I'll amuse myself last night, for example, while I was in bed, I got into bed nice and early. I was reading about King Henry IV because I was watching that Shakespeare the other day, and I was just going through, the whole history of his reign, and it's the kind of thing that most people would not be that interested in, I have to tell you. I think I'm in a very small group of people who would care about the reign of King Henry IV. So, again, the usefulness, the utility of that is tiny. And certainly people aren't going to pay lots of money to hear my lecture on Henry IV. Anyway, so we have a new show that we recorded yesterday, and we spoke to Mac G.
Mm-hmm.
Sia wants to tell you the story about Mac G and why he was on the show, because he's been getting a lot of attention. I saw he was trending for like 3 or 4 days in a row last week. And
jeez.
These days, we talk a lot on this show about cancel culture and about the Twitter mob and all of that stuff. And this guy fell foul of them in a very spectacular way last week. So Mac G came onto our TV show, and you'll see him tomorrow night telling his story. For the first time, I don't think he's had an interview.
No, this is the exclusive, and he's quite I was surprised by how forthcoming he was, and you can tell when someone is just being genuine. Like, this wasn't a publicity stunt. He's not doing it for this attention. Even his rebuttals haven't been for attention, but everything that he's sort of done over the past couple of days has caused a stir, and so he just came on to speak about it very candidly. So that'll go out tomorrow evening.
Yeah, he's very cool. So he got into trouble with the transgender community. He made some comments that he even admitted were transphobic. He's been in trouble for a number of things over time, and he doesn't hold back. What I like about the guy is he's got a lot to say, and he says it. He's got a loyal audience that have followed him around for easily more than 10 years, and he's a good broadcaster. He says what is on his mind, and there are very few of those. Most of the people in broadcasting in South Africa are just grateful to have a job, so they will toe the line and they will say whatever they need to say to keep their job. They'll tell you what the time is, they'll go to the sport, news, weather, traffic, and they'll tell you what song just played, but they have nothing more to add, because the more you add after that, the more dangerous your broadcast becomes. And although you'll be pleasing the audience by being real, you might get fired. And they can't afford to be fired.
So yeah, and he was already like this, even while he was hired by different stations and companies where he really didn't care. And he was saying it like it is, which resulted in him being fired a couple of times. So he's still under fire, even when he owns himself.
So there's lots of things that that I want us to get talking about. I don't know if you noticed, Sia, but there was a great headline in the Daily Star newspaper in Britain about your friend, Meghan Markle.
Oh, what do they say?
So, of course, you know, there's lots of talk about. So Meghan Markle announced that she and Harry are having another child. We spoke about this briefly yesterday. But I love this headline. It says, publicity shy woman tells 7.67 billion people, I'm pregnant. There it is. There's the headline. Publicity shy woman.
Well,
okay.
She's definitely, definitely shy because she's also going to do a sit-down interview with Oprah on the 7th of March.
You see, this is what I don't understand about her, and she's just a complete hypocrite, and the fact that she thinks we can't see it is disgusting. She's like, we're moving to America because Harry and I can't handle the press, and we can't handle all this attention from the media. And then what do? Every time anything happens in their life, they're posing for a picture, or there's some tell-all story that they've got coming. They've got the series that's coming out on Netflix, don't they? And now they're going to be on Oprah.
Deal with Netflix, yeah.
Oprah. Oh, do me a favor. I just can't stand her and Harry. I can't stand them. Such terrible people.
I'll reserve my comment up until I watch it on the 7th of March.
Now, I'm telling you now.
But supposedly, this is what we know so far, that the interview will start off with her and Oprah first, chatting around what her life has been like and her troubles that she has had. And then Harry will join them afterwards.
Oh, how boring.
Bring your eyes back into your front of the skull. Don't roll them back too much.
God, that's so boring. Ugh. Tracy says the reason that she moved is because she can't handle the press. They see right through her. It took them a while, but they do. I just love the fact that the British press aren't even holding back. They're like, they put up that headline and they put a picture of Harry and Meghan and they're lying on the grass barefoot and all that stuff. And then they show a picture still from a movie where their actor's doing exactly the same thing. And they're like, the people on the right are actors. The people on the left look like they should be actors. So they're getting no love. And I promise you, if they go back to Britain now, they will be met with nothing but hatred.
I don't think that can be an option at this point, right?
No, it's not. I mean, the Queen won't have them back. She's, according to all the available reading material, she's like not interested in Harry at all anymore. She's taken away all his important responsibilities. She's like, once you leave, you can never come back. So they're done. Now they have to be actors.
Look, maybe this is their way, as the world is opening up. You know, they need to now, maybe their books in line, their speaking tours in line, and they're trying to get back into that circuit. So they need to drum up some hype around that.
Yeah. Well, some people say, Annette says she can't stand them either. It's just you, Sia. You're the only one on this show who likes them.
I know. Yeah. I know.
It's just unbelievable.
It gives me hope.
So anyway,
you know, the same way where you can have your architecture firm, it gives me hope that someday
you'll work for Oprah.
Will come.
Oh, you want a prince still. Okay, well, let's talk about someone who we really featured quite a lot in the show in the last couple of days because he died a while ago and he was this big deal broadcaster, Larry King. Apparently his will has come out. And the valid Larry King will is raising a lot of eyebrows. People are very suspicious of this thing because there are typos. There are it's all handwritten. It looks like it was written in a hurry. People are very suspicious of this. And according to the stipulations of the will, it only lists a fortune of $2 million.
Mm.
And that's very odd. It also leaves his wife the majority of it, which is odd because he has kids.
No, the wife is out of it completely.
Oh, she gets nothing? I thought she was getting everything.
Makes it even more odd, right?
Oh, wow. All right. Oh, okay. So that doesn't sound very nice.
So
which wife? There were eight of them. So is this the last
good
one?
Point. Yeah, this is the wife of 22 years, and they were already on their way to getting divorced officially. But even those divorce proceedings, while Larry was still alive, the wife was going to get something. There was going to be a settlement, and she was going to be paid a lump sum initially and then paid out every single month. So it seems very weird that in 2019, this will was written, and according to lawyers now, it's everything connects to it being a legal document. I think even though it's handwritten, all you have to do is stipulate all of the terms that you want. Your full name needs to be listed, and you have to sign, and that deems it a legal document. But the fact that it was handwritten makes it a little sketchy. And it starts, there's a portion of it that says, I hereby leave 20% of my value to my kids. And then that 20% is scratched out. And then on top of it, he wrote, supposedly, if it is him, wrote 100%.
Oh, wow. So he's left nothing to the wife. Sure.
Yeah, he has six kids. And, you know, what if he was ill at a point in 2019 and we don't know? And maybe, like, he was pressured into writing this. This is my imagination running off with me.
But who would have pressured him? The children? Because they're the beneficiaries, right? I mean, if it was the wife pressuring them, she would have got it.
Yeah, also the fact that it lists his fortune as $2 million US dollars for a man who's been working for 40, 50, 60 years.
He's definitely got more than that.
So where's the rest of the money?
Huh. I mean, the thing about a will is, and I remember studying this in first year law, because you do law of succession. So the first important thing is there a will? Is the will valid? For a will to be valid, as you said, it's got to have your name. It's got to have witnesses who attest to the fact that your signature is at the bottom of every page. You have to list and dispose of all of your assets, or at least a majority of them. And those which are not covered, you need to include some kind of overall clause to say, well, whatever is left besides the things I've stipulated, they must go X, Y, and Z direction. And then you have to appoint an executor, and that executor has to make the decisions that are not so clear from the will. So if Larry didn't do all of that, that's surprising, because he seems to have made a lot of money over his life, and he seems to have more or less managed his business affairs really well. So it would be weird that he would have such a messy will.
Yeah.
And really, can I just say something on this front?
There's speculations that his money is in different trusts, as opposed to he might have $2 million in US dollars sitting in an investment somewhere, but maybe there are trusts devoted to different kids or different wives.
Well, if they're trusts, then there are trustees, and if they're trustees, then they will know how to dispose of that money. But it's interesting, like this is a lesson for all of us. And by the way, I got lots of emails. Thank you very much from people who wanted to suggest people we could speak to about first aid kits, because these are, you know, where else are you going to get this stuff? Who has time to think about this stuff in the normal day-to-day goings-on of your life? And yesterday we spoke about getting an expert, a paramedic, or someone who knows this stuff to tell us what should be in our first aid kits and what should be in our medicine cabinets. And we're going to do that, by the way. So thanks for all the suggestions.
Yeah.
And here's another one. It's like you've got to know who to talk to about a will. And if you haven't thought about a will before, and it doesn't have to be complicated, you don't have to see a team of lawyers to get your will done. You just have to write down your kind of last will and testament, write down your own desires for who gets your stuff, if there's anything left, where your money is, you know, who's got control of it now, and just make sure that you tick all the legal boxes. Because if you don't, and you expect people to have an easy time once you're gone, you're just really naive. And I just think, keep your affairs in order. You know, even if you're in your 20s, write a will, because you never know what could happen. And then at least it makes it clear to people. Put in the will, for example, there's little things like whether or not you've got investments and what those investments are and where you can find them and who your banker is. And if you've got a safe somewhere and that safe has got money in it, then tell people where the safe is and tell them what the code is in the will. If you own anything that's extremely valuable, put that in there too. If you want to make provision for your children or your cousins or your nephews or your nieces or your aunt or whoever it is, then put that in there. I mean, like, it's just keeping things tidy, you know. And even if you do it today, it'll take you a couple of minutes, but it's worthwhile doing it. so that everybody, when you're gone, will go, wow, you know, thank goodness Sia was so organized.
Especially if you have, you know, kids or an ex, or,
definitely,
you know, an ex and you're remarried,
yeah,
you know, that gets messier. But it's shocking to me how it's become part of just what we're used to. Someone big and famous dies, and then there'll be a big brouhaha over their will. Because as well, this wife of 22 years is already gearing up to contest this in court. Yeah, but remember, like Michael Jackson, there was a big will saga. Aretha Franklin didn't have a will up until some handwritten thing was discovered in her couch.
I mean, really. And by the way,
what?
one of the other things you've got to put in your will is you've got to give people your passwords to your social media accounts so they can either deactivate them or, you know, put up a message to stay there for posterity, you know, like, you know, thanks very much. By the way, Garrett's gone now. You know, family can be contacted here if you need to get hold of them, but otherwise, thanks very much. Lots of love, blah, blah, blah. Because you can't just have your social media account living forever. It would be weird, right? I think you've got to make plans for that too. So all of that stuff you've got to write down. And then,
and your last tweets can't be wet ass pussy, you know? You don't want that.
It can. It'll just be very, very sad.
You just don't want that.
Carl says, I've got no real assets to speak of, but I just had another kid. So I've already updated my will to include him. Be tidy. Live tidily. Gareth, firstly, you need things to be able to leave when you pass on. Who wants my false teeth, says Chris. Yeah, don't worry about that. But I mean, even if it's just, you know, your personal effects, like your watch or your car, could be something really small. It could be like a, you know, your phone, for heaven's sake. You might want to leave that to somebody. Who knows?
Geez, I can just speak from things that I've seen around, and a lot of traditional African cultures place a lot of value on any belonging that a person had. So just the fact that, you know, my father's coat,
right,
it's very important,
yeah,
and
yeah,
who gets that because yes, they're the new man of the house, or, you know, my father's hat. It seems so small, but these are the reasons why people fight. As well, it ends up being, oh, it was his favorite suitcase that he carried at work every day.
Yeah. Well, Mac G says somebody, wow, congrats on landing the director of Charlie's Angels for the show. No, not that Mac G, Sean Gray. Very good. But yeah,
you forgot that.
You will see him on our show tomorrow. So what now? All right. Cool. So we've got lots of other things to get to, messages. We've got Jean-Jacques Cornish joining us later on. We've also, I don't know if you remember Chris from Coronation, who's been on the show a couple of times. We're going to talk to him because Christo is the, he's the investment specialist at Coronation. He's going to tell us about what we can do at the end of this tax year to save some money, what we should be investing in, what tax-free investments there are, which could save you some money, because we've got to find those. And there are lots of questions about how Tito is going to balance the budget, and that's his problem. But you should look after your money. And we'll find out from Krista how you can do that.
Who was that? Like Carl, who said he has no real assets to leave? Well, Krista can help.
Yeah, Krista will help you start sorting that out, slowly but surely. One of the cool things that we'll be doing this morning with JJ Cornish is we'll be talking about a specific African country. And, you know, we've spoken already about Morocco. And I thought that it would probably be worthwhile for us to look at another West African country that we've been interested in on the show. We've spoken about it briefly before, the Gambia. But what we're going to do is we're going to speak to Jean-Jacques about his understanding of, you know, how the Gambia came together, what kinds of things you might want to know about it. It's really cool. So that's all coming up in just a little while. Very, very nice. So apparently, the White House has told Kamala Harris's niece, it is her niece, is it? Mina, to stop using her aunt to build her brand. So this is interesting because this Mina Harris has got like pictures of her and Kamala everywhere. And she's using it to grow her social media following and sell a bunch of cheap shit. We got to talk about that. God, I forgot completely about headlines. I just looked at the time now and said, oh my God. So let me quickly go to some headlines, give you an idea of what's going on in the world. Five things you need to know. First of all, there's been a farmer accused of abuse, and this is in the Western Cape. He's accused of the attempted murder of a worker and his girlfriend. He's been released on 3,000 rands bail. Activists who attended his court appearance in Claver are angry, saying workers tend to be the victim of crimes on farms. It is alleged that the farmer shot at the pair after a disagreement, but no one was hurt. So the accused is alleged to have a history of violence, and the defendant's lawyer says he doesn't have any previous criminal charges, but his alleged victim says he's already been receiving death threats for reporting the matter to the police. Ooh, not going to go away for a long time, this tension between farm workers and farmers. Jacob Zuma says, I have no objection to the law, but I object to the Zondo inquiry. Remember, he didn't pitch up yesterday. There was a tweet or an Instagram post, I can't remember what it was, from Duduzane, his daughter. She was in Nkandla with him, and they were posed for a photograph together, super relaxed. He wasn't going anywhere, not in a hurry to appear before the commission. And they have actually issued an arrest warrant for him now. So we will see what happens. And hopefully...
I don't know.
Hopefully the Constitutional Court will climb
in here. I'm the only one, but I'm starting to feel this little churning in my stomach.
Yeah.
The more we talk about former President Zuma in the news,
well,
it's just becoming way more frequent again.
And it's all about him.
He's coming back.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Well, he feels a little too familiar.
There is no need at all for anyone to mess around here. He is in direct contravention of a court order, so he's in contempt of court. He should be arrested. They should just send some heavy cops over there and just take the guy and put him in jail. Really, it's over now. There's no need for us to mess around anymore here. Story finished. If you and I did it, we'd be arrested. So who's he to be special? In fact, he's less than special because he's the one who stole the money in the first place from the people of this country. As far as I know, none of us have. And the Optimum mine workers have demanded unpaid salaries. They gathered outside the mine yesterday, demanding to be paid up to 6 months in back pay. And ENCA reported on the story yesterday. The Optimum coal mine obviously used to be owned by the Guptas. So no surprise that those people haven't been paid. Ugly, ugly story. From EWN this morning, the Democratic Republic of Congo has started an Ebola vaccination because there's been a new outbreak of that. Oof, you do not want that spreading. So health workers in the Eastern DRC have been injecting people with a vaccine for Ebola after four cases, two of them fatal, surfaced just 3 months after the country's last outbreak of the disease. The authorities today launched an anti-Ebola vaccination campaign in Butembo just a week after the virus re-emerged. And we'll carry on with Africa with JJ in just a moment or two. But that would scare the hell out of me because, trust me.
Because there's just not enough killing us right now.
Listen, Corona's bad, but Ebola it's just the worst. And then a UK-based monitor, NetBlocks, reported a near total internet shutdown in Myanmar. So they're trying to stifle dissent, and so much of it is online in that country. So they just shut down the internet. They announced stiff penalties for those opposing the coup leaders. Signs that another outage was imminent came after an internet service provider told BBC Burmese that online access was being blocked. The latest shutdown follows a pattern aimed at disrupting continuing opposition to the coup, which overthrew elected leaders, including longtime democracy campaigner Aung San Suu Kyi, who is still in custody. So, you see, that's what really wicked governments do, is they just shut down the whole internet. They just shut it down. There is no internet. And all the companies that run private internet are just told, if you want to carry on running private internet in this country, you will shut down. I've thought about this a lot because our whole business is online. And I wonder what we would do if our government decided to do something like that. I don't know the answer yet, but it's something I've been thinking about. All right, it's time for us to check in. as we do every couple of weeks, with JJ Cornish, who is a journalist, an editor, and an authoritative commentator on African affairs. Of course, this is all brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, and we look at what's going on the African continent. It's part of something we call Africanalysis. And JJ is here every what is it, 2 weeks here to talk to us. And we usually go through some of the big stories from all over the African continent. But we also occasionally zero in on one or two of those countries. And that's really interesting. Today we look at the Gambia. So JJ, I was getting everybody very excited about talking about the Gambia, because we've joked about the Gambia before. It's this tiny African country. It's a strip cut out of another country, essentially. And it's also the place that, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, they decided they were going to implement a 4-day work week. But other than that, we know nothing about the Gambia. And I thought, what an opportunity to have you explain to us, having experienced so much of Africa, to explain to us what goes on in a country like that. And every now and then we do one of these profile pieces on an African country. What do you know about the Gambia? What can you tell us about the Gambia?
Well, it's the smallest country on the African mainland. It's carved out of Senegal. It was swapped between Britain and France. Britain took the Gambia on the west coast and gave France Djibouti on the east coast. Now, this was back at the days of slavery. Now, the Gambia, which uses the definitive article, in the same way as the Netherlands and the Philippines do. And we don't know exactly why they insisted on holding it. Was it that they did not want to become confused with Zambia? We're not exactly sure. It's about 10,000 square kilometers, and it has about 5 million people. Now, so it's very small, and it's been quite stable, but with a very interesting background. Britain took possession then in 1664 and got it 1 year later. Maybe a people were moved down the Gambia River into the transatlantic slavery period. We don't know how many were taken before that time, but it was a source of slaves. And as I say, carved entirely out of quite much larger Senegal, so surrounded on three sides by Senegal, with the Atlantic seaboard about 80 kilometers long on the west. Now, in researching this article, I came upon a piece that I don't really want to recount, because I have until this day, or until very recently, believed that a British boat went up the Gambian River, fired a shot to the left or to the port, and then a shot to the starboard, and then continued up a little way and did it again and again, and thus was drawn the lines of the Gambia. It goes like a little crocodile up. And it's about 10 kilometers to either side of the river. And, you know, that's one of those facts that deserves to be true. Now they're saying it's apocryphal. Well, I believe the British Navy did it, and I hope that my viewers and listeners will do the same.
Damn, that's such a lovely story. I'm also sad that might not be true.
Well, we're not sure that it's not. So let's, you know, in the spirit of adventurous journalism, let's keep it alive. In 1965, with independence, Dorda Jawada, he took over, and he won several elections. There were a number of coup attempts, and after the one in the early 80s, Gambia and Senegal got together and they formed a Senegambia, but that lasted about 7 years, didn't go on. And in 1994, Yahya Jammeh took over in a bloodless coup. Well, there's no such thing as a bloodless coup in Africa, you know.
Sure.
Relatively few people died. And he held power for 22 years. He was the guy that believed that by the laying on of hands, he could cure HIV. It was under his presidency in the early 90s that I attended the African Union summit. So there I went to Gambia. And very interesting to see it, because It's a country that about 10% of the country is arable land. Poor soil, they grow peanuts.
Oh, wow.
But they also, they live very largely off oysters from the Gambia River, and they've got fantastic, I don't eat oysters as it happens, but they have fantastic recipes for oysters, it would appear. And tourism is huge there. Tourism is a very, very big industry. And I have to tell you that sex tourism was very popular.
I just want to ask you a favor. Could you turn off your video because we seem to have quite a bad line. If you could turn off your video, then we'll be able to get the audio right. And you can just pick it up where you said sex tourism, because we broke up for a minute there, and it was a very, very sexy part of this conversation to break up at. So just pick up with sex tourism, and we missed that.
Well, without my video, I want you to see that when I say sex tourism, I do it with a very serious face. You know? There's no sort of lascivious, leering look to me.
No,
I was
sure.
Hoping that would come. But anyway, so there was Zambia. And then Yahya Jammeh, after 22 years, lost an election, said, okay, I'm stepping down. I'm sorry, did I say I'm stepping down? No, I actually am not going to step down.
Right.
And ECOWAS, the regional grouping, the Economic Community of West African States, next to SADC, the most active economic grouping in Africa, said, I'm sorry, we heard the stepping down bit, we didn't hear the other. And they actually prepared very muscularly to move Yahya Jammeh out. And he actually thought better of that, so he didn't have to be forced. And he went and took exile in Equatorial Guinea,
which is a great place to go into exile, because of course the people who run Equatorial Guinea don't follow any rules.
Not really. The leader of Equatorial Guinea took power by killing his uncle.
That's right.
And it was, you know, it's one of those countries. Now he decided he wanted to come back just recently, Yahya Jammeh, and the people of Gambia, who are wanting for all kinds of crimes against humanity and excesses of human rights, said, come back at your peril.
Oh, really?
Now, Adama Barrow, the man who won that election in 2016, property developer, he took over and said, I will be in charge for 3 years during a transitional government. And it is at the end of that 3 years that people said, hey, Adama, remember the 3 years? And he said, who said 3 years? You know, this is African politics for you. So they pushed him. Finally, he's going to have an election in December this year. Now, why would I want to go along to that election in December this year? I'll tell you why. Because in the Gambia, you know, you and I stand on queues, talk about the candidates, say nasty things maybe out of earshot of others, prepare to make a cross or a mark on the paper,
yes,
drop it in a ballot box, and that's how we vote. Not in the Gambia. Gareth, they use marbles in the Gambia. And each of the candidates has a drum in a particular color with his or her picture on the outside. You drop a marble, your marble that is given to you when you go into the polling station, down a little funnel, boom, and that is how you cast
your
ballot.
That's how you vote.
Much easier. And do you know that in 2012, the election, which of course was Yahya Jammeh's election, there were only two spoiled ballots. Only two, and those were people who put their marbles on top of the barrel instead of dropping them down the funnel.
I don't know
what happened to them. I suppose you...
Is that system...
Yahya Jammeh said, oh, he didn't want to vote for me, and locked them up.
Is that system necessarily open to as much voter fraud as many other systems all over the world?
I'm imagining it would be, you know. I think to some extent, I don't know how you count ballots... I've been to elections where, you know, we went to double check on ballots and we found them oozing ink and paper wet in one corner of a yard and so on.
Yeah, exactly.
So how you count votes afterwards? I mean, the election electoral fraud happens right at the beginning. So I know as a veteran electoral observer, what you'd have to do is work out the system to go into the paper, into the ballot, that voting station, say, how many marbles have you handed out?
Right.
You know, and work that way. I'm sure that somebody like ISA, the Electoral Institute for Sustainable in Africa, the South African-based observation group, would work out a way. And I'll make sure to check with them before December. You know, if indeed, I don't know if they will go there, and if they are, I will implore them to take me with them.
That'll,
because I think it's something.
So
I mean, I found the Gambia a very interesting place to go to, a lovely people, and so it would be a great delight to go back. When I was there, the influence of Muammar Gaddafi was absolutely amazing. He had something like 4 stretch limos.
Wow.
Then a couple of stretch Geländewagens and a couple of stretch. Anything that Muammar Gaddafi drove was stretch. He had premises all over the place. Of course, he was doling out the loot to Yahya Jammeh, keeping him up, you know. So it was a country that was propped up by people like that. I don't know why they bothered in, I suppose, for the strategic positioning, because there's no oil or anything like that off the Gambia. So, you know, there's no financial reason to prop it up. It's a country that has a strategic value being where it is.
Tell me.
And of course, Senegal has enormous moral weight. So, you know, it's good to be there.
JJ, obviously, if you're in the Gambia, it's extremely important to have good relations with Senegal, because they, as you said, surround you on 3 sides and you can't flee into the sea. So what are the relations like with the rest of the Western African community?
Well, it's a very tight-knit community. And as I've said, with ECOWAS, the regional grouping, when it became clear that Yahya Jammeh, who was not a good leader, had been beaten in an election and wasn't going to leave, ECOWAS stepped in. And I think Gambia to this day is... The Gambians to this day are delighted. I don't know, for example, when Adama Barrow ran his 3 years out and looked like he was going to hang on, whether ECOWAS sort of shook their finger at him too and said, yo, Adama, time to go, man, or time at least to put yourself before the people. ECOWAS is a grouping which, in terms of peacekeeping, diplomatic relations within the grouping, economic ties, and then, of course, just generally wanting to see prosperity in the region, is very active. And so the Gambia would be pulled in on anything there and would benefit from anything there as well. As I
No, I think we've just lost JJ.
Senegal standing in the region. Again, Senegal not wealthy.
Oh. JJ, I'm
Have
afraid.
You got me still?
No, I got you, but I'm afraid we're out of time anyway. So that was terrific. I mean, what an interesting collection of anecdotal evidence about what a strange place the Gambia is. JJ Cornish, I hope you get to go back and observe the election for us. It'll be amazing. There he is, the authoritative commentator on African affairs for us on cliffcentral.com, and it's all brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. JJ, we'll check in with you in a couple of days' time. There he is. All right, I'm going to let him go because that line was not so great, but we managed to get some really great stuff out of him. Man, that's fascinating. So if you want to go to the Gambia, you need to know that you probably eat oysters. You may be going for the sex trade, which is apparently a very, very big part of the Gambia's economy. And you could meet people with amazing names like Fatou Bensouda. Well, sounds like a character from Star Wars. And I love that story about the British ship going up the Gambia River, and wherever its cannonballs on either side landed was the mark of the border, even though it's not true, he says. But it's a nice story to remember.
Voting, I hope it is.
And voting with marbles. That's all a bunch of stuff I didn't know. I'm sure you didn't either. All right, cliffcentral.com.
Do you think those two people were shunned? Who spoiled the ballots?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Come on.
Well, I don't know how they found them, because you just put a marble in. Could be anyone, right?
Good point.
No, I mean, I didn't scratch your name onto it. So I don't think there's any repercussion for you leaving your marble outside of the barrel. When we come back, we've got lots of things to talk about, including your taxes, because it's almost the end of the tax year, and we don't want you giving this government a single cent more than they deserve. We'll find out how you can have tax-free investments and what you can do with your money to manage it better. We'll be speaking to Christo Lingenfelt, who's from Coronation, in just a short while.
CliffCentral.com.